Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk. I'm your host, Damian Abraham, and once again, I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved with punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, my new buddy, my new pal, you may know him from American football, you may know him from Joan of Arc, you may know him from Cap'n Jazz, you may know him from Owls, you may know him as Owen, Mike Kinsella. Is on the show today, and this is a fantastic conversation with a legend. More on that in 1 second, but first, if you'd like to get in touch with me, head over to the email address, turnedoutofpunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by my brother, who is this show's producer, and the guest booker extraordinaire, Tristan Abraham, and he will get the message to me. Thank you, Tristan, for all the hard work you do for the show. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at LeftForDamian. If you'd like to support the show, tell all your friends about it. You can also check out the Turned Out of Punk YouTube page, TikTok page, Facebook page, Instagram page. All those are found at Turned Out of Punk on those platforms. There's videos and other stuff that gets thrown up on those things, so check them out. I play in a band. We are called Fucked Up. We will be going on tour in July. We've got a lot of cool shows on that, including playing with Off at one of those final Off shows, as well as Merch Fest on that tour as well. You can find out more information over at fuckedup.cc. I'm not being cagey, but we have more stuff to announce soon, dates and stuff, but more on that on future episodes of this podcast as well. All right, on to today's show. As I said off the top, we got a legend here, Mike Kinsella, who started playing in bands with Cap'n Jazz at age 14 and then has played in some of the most significant bands to kind of come out of the, we talk about this a lot on the show, but I call it punk. I don't know what Mike would have referred to it prior to this, but hopefully now he refers to it as punk as well. Be it Joan of Arc, be it Owls, be it Owen, be it American football, or the stuff he records as Owen. There's a lot, including this brand new fantastic Owen record, The Falls of Sioux, which has just come out. You can find it everywhere now. It is a beautiful listen, as is all the stuff this guy does. This guy is a fantastic songwriter. But we don't just talk about songs on this episode. We talk about lots of stuff. You'll hear it in a second. Why would I spoil it for you? I do get all my SNL dates wrong in this one. The Sugar Cubes did play in 88. Rollins Band didn't play until 97. Faith No More is in 90. Fishbones in 90. There's some other interesting ones that I'm REM prior to that too. But anyway, my SNL dates that I give in this one are all over the map. It'll make sense when you get to that part. Well, it won't make sense if you just listen to the dates I'm given. But that's it. Don't forget to catch Owen on tour in Europe in the next couple weeks, and then doing some American dates all around this brand new record. And that is all from me. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy Mike Kinsella on Turned Out a punk. Mike, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for the interest. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm very excited to get to talk to you because not only are we fellow ex-JTree recording artists, but I'm a huge fan of all your work, but I think Cap and Jazz are a very underrated band, and I am very excited to nerd out about that with you and Chicago in general.
Yeah, awesome. I'll try to remember anything.
Well, I got to start off the way they all start off, which is, Mike, how'd you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you ever came across it?
I'm sure it was older brother Tim somehow. I don't know the specifics. I imagine it was. I should start off with, I don't know if I'm punk, but I think I have enough crossover with punks to be able to keep up. I guess it would be older brother Tim sort of got into everything first, and I just kept, I'd kind of be listening at his door, at his bedroom, and then some stuff stuck more than others. It was probably somewhere, it was some sort of trickle down from like hair metal to real metal to like thrash metal to industrial to punk or something like that. Yeah.
Chicago had a really good kind of thrash metal underground metal scene, right? Like Master and Abomination and all those.
You know what? This is, I was in fifth or sixth grade, so I don't know. I didn't get out to many shows yet.
I didn't see this at all. So either.
I was into, we would, there was like this record store that I would be allowed to walk to with Tim, if Tim and his friends were going, they were older. And we would like rent, what was it called? It was just it was like thrash, whatever volume 4, thrash 5. And this band Violence, I loved that band. It was just so, it was more like that California scene. I think I was into like this sort of like skate metal thrash shit. It was also like all this happened within like 2 years, because once I heard like The Cure and The Smiths, I was kind of like, oh, wait a minute, that's like my vibe. So,
yeah, it's an amazing time kind of for music at that point, with I guess the post-punk reverberations and thrash metal all kind of bubbling up as like a young kid.
I guess too, I didn't know, like I was into like the musicality of it. Like I was trying to figure out cool, the chug guitars and like all this stuff. And like, it was like osmosis sort of like informing things that I would like take with me. It wouldn't be as loud or as, aggressive the way I do it, but it's all stuff that I like appreciated about it. I mean, I guess when I'm thinking punk though, I'm thinking like maybe the opposite of that. I'm talking like the metal kind of stuff. And then punk was sort of like the dumbed down, like, oh, anybody can pick up a guitar and just do this. That was like the allure to be able to do it in our basement and, and sound just as good as the bands doing it. I think we're better than the Misfits. Like, I think we're better. Yeah.
Well, I think that's the great thing about punk is that, and that's why it is, like you're saying, the inverse of metal in that way, is that you don't have to work on virtuosity at all. Like some of the best bands had no virtuosity.
Oh, I mean, it almost like made it less credible or less cool, I think, if you were like good at it. If you were good at it, then you were like this polished, like face-to-face kind of, I like face-to-face. I like anything, I'm a melodic guy, but I'm not like, oh, those guys are like, they weren't like the cool part of punk that I was like into, or like, it was kind of like the dirtbag sort of anarchist kind of side of it. Yeah.
Well, Chicago, like, we'll go on.
Yeah. Well, like also like maybe the horror side of it. Like, I mean, Misfits was my favorite band. My first favorite band was Kiss, 2 years old. So like anything like makeup or like fun thing, I was like, oh, that's cool. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, I think Misfits are a lot like Kiss, like almost like a He-Man toy as a band.
Totally. Yeah. They can kick Kiss's ass probably. yeah, but it's still, there's definitely like this like cartoon element for sure. And that's attractive to the young mind,
Yeah, I find them a fascinating band because they're simultaneously the greatest punk band ever and not at all a punk band.
Yeah, no, I mean, they sound like some sort of 50s pop, but dirty and guitar and, and then the horror element. And then, yeah, it's Yeah. Punk's so weird. I guess like I don't know how to like I'm stressed and I'm like, oh man, I don't really know. I don't know if I'm punk or not. I kind of like I said, like sounded like I was just like adjacent to my whole life. And then I was driving around in vans that as a teenager and playing all like DIY shows, and a lot of the bands were playing with the punk bands and stuff. And I was like, and I just would stay in the van and peruse a J. Crew catalog or something. I don't know. Or like just play guitar in the band by myself. I didn't, yeah, I don't know.
Well, if you're not a punk, you certainly changed the genre a lot with the stuff you did and an
Yeah.
impact on it.
I mean, yeah, I guess. Are we calling Cap'n Jazz punk?
I to
Yeah,
me,
it's punk. Okay.
I think of Cap'n Jazz is to punk what Operation Ivy is to punk, where they are punk bands that cause like a disturbance in the force. Not in a good way, in a good way, but like spawned these genres that went out from punk and didn't have as much to do with punk rock. But I 100% like Cap'n Jazz to me is definitely a punk band. Well, I
Cool.
guess up to you how you define it, but like you guys were on punk labels, you did punk shit,
I
like.
mean, that's what I guess it's like the ethos is sort of, it was definitely DIY punk. And like if you're, it's under that umbrella for sure. I guess I'm just thinking musically, but it's loud and fast and a little wild, little, what I mean? Like unpredictable. So yeah, I mean, like all the adjectives work, but.
Well, but I think in the same way that I would say that Joan of Arc's a punk band, it doesn't have to be loud and fast and aggressive
Oh,
with
cool.
punk,
Okay,
right?
good. Yeah, totally.
Like
No, Joan of Arc's like the punkest band because it's like unlistenable often. You know what I mean? Like it's just like what is happening? Even being in the band, I remember like getting in fights with Tim, or like he'd be like, okay, here's the song, or like the element of what a song is. And then I was playing drums mostly, and he'd be like, okay, but like take the beat and just like turn it upside down. Or like just don't play the one. Don't want, and I'm like, okay, so I'm gonna take the beat apart. And it's like, okay, cool. And I'm not gonna play the original part either then. And then by the end, the song isn't even like the song anymore. It's just five people trying not to play the song, which is, I guess, punk. I don't know. It's cool.
Yeah, I remember seeing guys in Toronto, and it was over my head at the time. Like
Was
I
that
was,
with the Promise Ring?
I
Was
don't,
that?
I wasn't. No, it was that. No, it wasn't with Promise Ring at that show because you guys played the Rivoli at a matinee, which
Okay.
is where the kids in the hall kind of got their
Oh,
start and
cool.
stuff. It's like a comedy club as well as a venue. Great venue.
Also fitting. Yeah. So it's also Joan of Arc's definitely comedic. So.
But that was punk. Like it's to me like. The idea that punk has to be loud and aggressive, like I think there has to be an edge to it, but I think the sonic of it is entirely up to the person that puts it out. Like you look at that stuff coming out of New Zealand, right? Like the Dunedin scene, that's punk as fuck to me.
I like it. Cool. I will do this interview more confidently. Here we go.
Yeah, don't have complete confidence in being on this show. I
Yeah.
had Tiffany on this show and I made it work, so I could definitely
Whoa.
make it work with you, Mike.
Is she punk?
No, it was
Don't know. Okay. How'd she get on the show?
because your publicist insisted she was, and I did research, and she had records on Cleopatra Records,
Okay.
and the timing would have lined up that there could have been some weird crossover, you know, and but no, there was not really. But luckily, she was discovered by Hoyt Atchison, who. He's the dad in the movie Gremlins, who brings
Okay.
the gremlin home, but he also put out these unbelievable, kind of like freaked out country psych records. And
Whoa,
yeah,
yeah.
you know that song, the Pusher? Steppenwolf covers it, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't, was he doing this before or after Gremlins? Did he like,
Before, back in the
okay, so
60s.
he was just properly, yeah,
But
cool.
he discovered Tiffany.
And then he brought her to every mall in America.
Yeah, or
Fantastic.
his mom was her manager, so his mom was the one I
Crazy.
think that really kind of made that happen. But anyway, this is not about Tiffany, this is about you. And so, but rest assured, punk is definitely I think that's the thing about it, is it's something that like what is it? But it's something that we all have this relationship to where we don't oh, go on, sorry.
Well, I play most of what or often I play like solo acoustic. I was just saying this. I don't remember the context. Oh, I did an interview. It was about like guitar stuff. And I'm like, oh, like on paper, it was about using alternate tunings. And the goal, I'm like, well, I just, when I hear like an acoustic guitar in standard tuning, makes my skin crawl. It just sounds like any coffee house, even though I know like it's what I'm doing isn't that different. It isn't just a G chord into a D. You know what I mean? Like whatever it is different enough that it at least allows my brain to do it without being totally embarrassed. But I mean, I've played some of the most punk shows I've played have been like just solo acoustic, where like, whatever, I'm in a bad mood or the crowd's filled with assholes or whatever, and I just like either walk off the stage or I'll just like pick on them. And with the mic, I'm the only guy with the microphone, so I'll say some badass and then mic drop, walk off the stage. So okay, because you've convinced me. I'm so glad of this interview. Now I am punk. Let's do it.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's the thing is like Patrick Fitzgerald playing a piano back in the day when punk first happens, or Billy Bragg doing that sort of solo
Absolutely.
electric thing, right? Like the punk just opened this door and became this thing that just named something that probably had already, well, definitely already existed, but like, you're not doing it in service of a music career necessarily. You're doing it in service of being part of this thing. And it's like,
The
you know, and it's
scene
this,
for sure, and yeah. And saying something and maybe changing something. You know what I mean? Like there's like a, yeah, I've never been like political, but I think like it's like obvious where I stand politically just by the way I conduct myself and stuff. So yeah, it's all true.
So I guess going way back when, I find siblings that are on this show, myself included with my brother, there's a really interesting relationship with music discovery. Like years ago, Stephen McDonald from Red Cross came on and tells a story that his brother judged these two CDs he had brought home as the younger brother, and to this day, every time he goes into a record store, he has to take a shit. Like he gets the nervous shits. And I look back on the way I treated my little brother getting into this music and being really dismissive of his discoveries and things like that.
There's absolutely, I mean, that's what I was going to say when I was like, we would like, I would drive around and I would play these, we played house shows and we did everything punk bands do. I was just like shy and I just was like total little brother at the time. So I was just kind of hiding all the time. You know what I mean? Like, I just like, it's, this is his thing. I'm playing the drums, but this is, that I was gonna bring that up though. There's definitely like a little brother thing. Yeah, I don't think he ever made me, well, maybe, I don't know. He never like, he didn't like shame me. I think he was definitely aware when I was like maybe taking like missteps. Like, that's not cool. What are you doing? Like veering off of the cool path. I had to learn in my own time sometimes. I didn't always have him just helping me, so.
Yeah, well, when he was on the show, he brought up these two tape stores that you guys would go to, one being closer, and then one being a little further away that had much more of like a kind of punk hub vibe to it.
Hip Cat was probably the close one. Wow, what's the other one called? It was like Rock and Roll something, or
I don't think he
yeah.
t said the name. I think he just called it the punk hub
Oh,
on his own.
okay. I mean, one of them was Hip Cat, and it was eventually it was like like every Saturday afternoon or whatever, every weekend it was just like, okay, you get to go with your brother. And I don't know if we got spending money. Somehow we always bought stuff. I don't know where I had any money or whatever, but I would buy like Kiss, Japanese Kiss imports, like just live in Tokyo, whatever. Like this, it was properly like a, it's a, just like a very cool record store, like just totally curated by these like sort of freak dudes. One of our friends from high school, Angel, ended up getting a job there. So like it continued to be like pretty fucking awesome. And I guess too at the time, like this is, pre-internet and shit. That's how you found stuff. So if the dudes there, whatever they thought was cool, like if they thought this Japanese Kiss import was cool, then that's what I'm gonna get into because my world is only as big as that record shop. So it was all the obvious stuff. And then I guess starting your own bands and touring, you kind of like, oh, there's these scenes in every city, and they're all these indie bands and all these DIY bands are like fucking great. And you have to like order the records straight from them, you know what I mean? Or Maximum Rock and Roll or whatever it is, however you find this shit. And then like yeah, I don't know. All the DC scene was like such an inspiration of just like you can do it yourself. So, yeah, once we realized we can just like do this shit ourselves and start our own band or whatever, then I don't think we haven't really looked back. We're just like, oh, that's cool. Why don't we just do this, you know?
Do you remember the first like local band you remember hearing about that like was, doing stuff, putting out records? Because you guys are so young.
I mean, I guess by the time we were playing shows, like Screeching Weasel was kind of a big deal, at least in Chicago in our world. They were from like some like close suburbs and stuff. There was this band. The first show, like sort of punk DIY show I went to, I think was Jawbreaker, and it was Green Day or Jawbreaker at like a suburban bar. Yeah, it was just like, this is awesome. You know, like again, I was allowed to go because my brother was going and I was in eighth grade or something. And then eventually, I mean, like by the time I was probably, maybe I was in eighth grade or a freshman in high school, but then like Tim and all his friends were like, they were like booking Lungfish shows and like, you know, properly like sort of curating again, like this Chicago suburb scene that was like, that was incredible. Yeah. You know, going to see like Hoover, like all these bands that like I'm still kind of like fans of. You know, so influential to see like they were kind of like a step older and like hold, that's like the goal. Like, oh my God, like they get to come hang out in Chicago. How fun is this? Like you get to go meet people and like, yeah. Yeah, changed my world.
It's interesting too, because that point in Chicago, it is like the rise of the Chicago suburban punk scene, and all the bands that would kind of come out of that, that wind up like when you think about like the biggest bands and the most influential bands, it's a lot of it's Chicago stuff. Like there's so many bands out of that scene that would wind up having impact. But it's that like what you're talking about, that mid 90s, early 90s, I guess, but like into the mid 90s. Into the late 90s, where you've got like Chicago's it, and it seems like so many of the things are coming out of the suburbs, be it like.
See, I don't even know if the bands that I'm like every weekend we would go. There's this band, Ape Bark. You know that
Love
band?
fucking Ape Bark.
Holy shit. Like, yeah, they, I just, like, I haven't kept up with them. I don't know them. He came to an Owen show, the solo thing. The bass player, Steve, out of the blue. I'm like, this guy's familiar looking and he's, you know, 50s or whatever. And I end up like ditching all my friends and sitting in a booth with him and just gushing. I'm like, oh my God, you don't understand. Like, Ape Bark, like, so unique, so cool. Like, everything that, it was a Doug Ward, was he the singer, I think? And he started,
V verse, is it?
yeah, V Reverse
V
was
reverse,
another
sorry, that's it.
band.
Yes.
But the label, like, that was like the Cap'n Jazz's first song was on like this
Underdog.
compilation, Underdog Records. Yeah, like all that shit. And then he lived in this loft with some friends that. Just, I guess I'm like, I'm going back and I'm seeing it all. It's like, up until this point, I was just like, you know, I was on the football team and the basketball team and just didn't, I just was a suburban kid or something. But then, like, on some Saturday, I'd like get a ride into the city and see these dudes that live in this loft and they run a record label from their loft. And like, there's a little corner has a recording studio. I'm like, I'm getting a fucking four track. Like, you know, I'm doing this all wrong. Like, I wanna make music. It's so fun. So, yeah.
That Underdog Records scene is awesome. And like what you're talking about, that loft thing, that's come up on the show a lot, that there were like collective meetings that people would go to then. And it really does seem like, yeah, like a real source of inspiration for like a whole
Yeah,
generation of
it's
kids.
every so often we would like I remember always being jealous like touring in Europe. You know, there's like some autonomous zone properly, like you're like your show is in some like anarchy abandoned government sponsored somehow, but like you know, I'm just like, why do these places don't exist in Chicago, but or like in the States even. You know, and like before the show, like some guy's gonna show you how to like, I don't know, like fix your bike, you know, like fix your bike tire. I just remember just like being young and being like, this is so cool. Like this is like, or like how to, you know, how to survive in a van for a week. And there's like these little like punk seminars happening and everybody's sort of like bringing like potluck. Like it's just like this community thing that, I guess it's the underground loft is kind of like in my mind like that. You know what I mean? It's just like it's not a big thing, but it's like this group of people that are like-minded and sort of like in my mind socially responsible and like helping others like in a way like that's how I feel like the scene always was. It was sort of like you know, like, oh, you can, yeah, sure, you can be like the seventh band on this bill because you need gas money. No problem. You know what I mean? We'll raise $60 for your band or something. And then everybody helped everybody. And yeah.
It really does feel like the 90s was the closest that ever came to happening in, I guess, North American, broadly speaking, because I'm throwing Canada in there too, but like hardcore and punk, where you would have like Food Not Bombs, you'd have AK press tables at the backs of shows,
Totally.
you
Yeah,
know, like
yeah,
it did feel like, because it was, and this is like, once again, the coming back to this thing, punk, and the power of this thing is that it wasn't in service of anything but this scene. So you weren't like, there was no like, okay, how do we make money off this? What's the merch cut for the venue?
Not at all. Yeah. No, there was no, I mean, there was no, there was no way to make money. You know what I mean? Like, even like, yeah, like the dudes in the back of the show selling their like imported records that they, you know, like, I mean, imported, like they just sort of mail cataloged the again, like the their 30 records they thought were cool. And like, that's the only chance you can find it, you know, in your town. So you bought it. Yeah, it wasn't, it was, I mean, I don't know what happened. I guess, my mind went straight to J Tree. Okay. Well, like, you know, like some of those bands that this is from just my experiences, like some bands on J Tree or some got popular and then they tried to go to a major and then that just like infiltrated everything. We're like, oh, all these bands were getting signed to majors. And then the whole, I guess the whole point was that you weren't going to like make money doing it. You just wanted to do it. And then all of a sudden it was like, well, what if you're offered money or something? And then people wanted the money. I don't know. I mean, the punk shit's still happening. I just, you know, I just got old and
Yeah, well, and that's why it's so awesome, because like we can't hold on to the zeitgeist of it forever, and you pass it off to another generation, and they're not going to sell out ever in the same way we were never going to sell out ever, and they will carry it to a new place, and it'll have power for them. And you know, I'm not saying you have to like age out and not be into it anymore, but like, yeah, you know, it's just not yours in the way it once was.
And it right, and it shouldn't be. I mean, that's the whole point. Like, it is. It's definitely like a youthful. I mean, I'm saying this as we're like embarking on these Cap'n Jazz reunion shows, and I'm like, I gotta join a gym. Like, I am not fit enough to even, you know. Yeah. Plus, I need to get paid if I'm gonna do it. I'm just kidding,
But
but not kidding.
I think it's also because like these brief moments in time that are documented on these records or in, you know, shitty VHS tapes, are become so important to a culture that, you know, going back to them and letting people experience those songs live. And I think that's like a real natural part of this thing. And I don't think it's counter to the whole
No,
process.
I think it's amazing. I mean, I mean I saw the best live show I've seen in like since I saw The Cure probably, you know, 7 years ago. The best live show I've seen since is The Cure. Like this summer, this past summer, I'm like, they're still the best. Like it's, you know, it's not like they're milking it or something. They're just like, we wrote these fucking songs and people want to see them and it's the best, you know.
And I would say that Dinosaur Jr.'s post reunion output is up there, it
Oh,
like
yeah.
with the first wave of stuff. Like my nostalgia, obviously, for the first wave of stuff is stronger, but yeah, like I love those new records.
Yeah. It's like totally it's like it's he's totally true to like this is what's coming out and it's right on. Yeah. No, they're great. Also the production's the same. You know what I mean? Like this it's not like he's trying, yeah. Huge fan.
Yeah.
Yep.
They were, I think, one of the first bands to, not first bands, but like one of the first wave of people to age out of hardcore, but like not leave it and not want to like turn your back on it and like find like a new, you know, like be like, oh, now I'm in a dance band type move that some people did, right? Like it's, but they were like, I think the roadmap for like, okay, what do you do when you don't necessarily identify with the kids that are now in charge of the scene?
Yeah, I mean they're definitely like elder statesmen on all these ways of like I mean I like loved I think Green Mine was like I guess I was in like 8th grade and it was like the only record I listened to and then like a few years later they were headlining whatever Lollapalooza was. And I went and I was like, so like, fuck this. Like, it was a terrible way to see. I've seen them, you know, in clubs and whatever for a couple of years. And then I was so annoyed that they were like I have to now see him on the lawn at this giant festival because I was young and punk or whatever. We've established I was punk.
Yes.
But then, I mean, again, yeah, like fast forward, and it's like, oh, cool. They still just want to keep putting out good records. You know what I mean? Great. I'm going to see him every fucking time. Like, it's the best. So, yeah, you can do it.
I kind of also now love the bad shows I saw bands play. I saw like Bad Religion one time play at like 4 in the afternoon as the sun is like blinding everyone on stage. And like, it was probably not a great performance for them, but the idea that that was such a unique time seeing them out of all the times I've seen them is something that I kind of like hold on to. So like seeing in a band in an awkward space or opening for someone and how they're just trying to manage that, I think that's like, I don't know, it's like maybe I just like the art of failure, and being in a
Well,
band now, I appreciate failing on and having to be in those awkward situations where maybe it's not working.
or like the triumph of like, you know what? We just did our job. We did it. Like
Yeah.
it was like the no one's the wiser how much the band is hating it. You know, that's the goal. It's like, yeah. American football played a stupid big festival. I guess it was this past summer. And you know, if anybody if like if there's a video of it, it's just gonna be all of us looking for a monitor guy the whole time. Like 35 minutes of us just looking for a monitor guy. And, okay, thank you very much. And we exit the stage. Like that was it. That's all I
Yeah.
remember from the whole show. So you know, somebody out there could be like, it sounded great. I'd be like, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't even know what it sounded like.
Yeah, and even if it didn't sound great, like I think that is like in a Grateful Dead bootleg style, like that is a memorable show that, you know, if we were tape
Right.
traded like that,
It's
like,
one part of the whole thing.
yeah,
Exactly. Right.
exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think that probably comes with getting older too, right? Like where you can finally like enjoy the failures as much as the successes.
Totally. I mean, it goes to like picking up my kids at school, and I'll be like, oh, I just said like seven dumb things to the other moms or whatever. You know what I mean? But I'm like, oh, well, like fucking Larry David style. Like, what am I gonna do? You know, I'm a little weird, I guess. I don't know. Whereas when the kids were little and, you know, I would be like, it would ruin my day. I'd be like, oh man, like I'm it's so, you know, all the other moms think I'm a dork or whatever. And now the kids are gonna get made fun of because their dad's weird. Like, but now I don't really take it with me as much. So,
I had
yeah.
real fear of being the weird dad because I had the weird dad as a kid.
Yeah. Do you have kids?
And I have kids. I got three
Okay.
kids. And I definitely am the weird dad, but luckily we're at an alternative school. So there's a lot of weird dads and
So
moms and
it's
parents. And
you're the coolest dad, the weirder, yeah.
well, there's definitely some really cool parents there. So I can't even claim that, but at least I'm not the strangest. Like when I show up to pick up the kids in sweatpants, no one's like, what's going on with this guy?
I just got back from my son had like a wax museum. He was dressed like Zeus, whatever. And another dad, it was me standing in a group of dads. I'm laughing because it just happened 20 minutes ago. And the one guy's like, oh, yeah, I'm working from home. You know, they're like, what's up, you know, with your sweatpants or something? He's like, oh, I'm working from home. And I'm like, you know how hard it was for me to put on pants to come here? Like, I work from home every day, motherfucker. Like, yeah. And I'm just like, oh, this is, they must think, the first day, my daughter started first grade, like in whatever. And she ended up being in this track where it was first grade through eighth grade, the same classroom.
Oh,
So
wow.
this is the first day of first grade, the first time I'm meeting all these parents. And I happen to have to go right to a funeral after that. So I was wearing a suit, you know, everybody's like, oh, hi, that's mine. You know, they're all adorable, the best. And then like every day after that, I would just show up in like a swimsuit, like, because I have nothing to do all day and I just wear swimsuits around. And I always laugh like the first, they must be like, whoa, what the fuck? Did he get fired after the first day of, you know, like his one day of work or something?
His life
And
went
then,
way downhill.
yeah, wow, like this, yeah, I really like tried to, or they think I really tried to impress them that first day, yeah, when the truth is I just had to go to a funeral,
It's way sadder. Way sadder than
yeah,
that.
it's, yeah, in all kinds of ways, way sadder, yeah.
It's it's weird, like the idea of being like a middle class band. And I say this like in the sense that like a band where you can make a living from this thing, never enough that you can be like,
I
fuck
know
off.
exactly what you mean. Yeah. I mean, it's like a great, it's like the best part-time-ish job. You know what I mean? Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And even, but you kind of, I couldn't do it full-time because, you know what I mean? Like, it's like almost like there's definitely a ceiling. How popular you are doesn't depend on what, you know, I guess I can play more shows, but there'd be diminishing results. There's not a great demand for more shows. And I have these kids I got to be home for. I mean, yeah, I know what you mean. It's sort of like, yeah, no, it's like, it's all my bands are like way more successful than I ever thought they'd be. And still just the middle class. Like, it's still, there's no aspiration of like getting to some other level or something. You know what I mean? I don't know what that is even. I don't know.
I think I'm limited in what I can do. I don't think you are, though. Like, I think if you chased it in the way that, like, probably it'd be kind of gross, to be honest. Like,
There would
like
be
for you,
gross.
I
That's what,
imagine it.
oh, that's what, I have no desire to. That's what I mean. I guess I'm just totally, I love like being able, I love being able to set up shows whenever I want. That's the goal. Like, oh, I want to go on tour next fall. Cool. You know, it's a week or two. It's perfect. By the time I'm home, I'm happy to be home. Yeah. How often do you guys play out?
Less and less these days, it seems, but we do probably about cumulatively 2 months of shows a year.
Oh, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
I
It's
mean,
like it,
but that's spread
with
out or
kids,
whatever. Yeah.
you know, and like now we have a festival offer and it's on my youngest child's birthday.
Yeah.
And they're 8. It's a real
Yeah.
birthday to
That's
them.
a real
So
birthday, yeah.
I
Right.
gotta be here for them. Like I tried to bring it up to them and I was like, are you okay, bud? If Dad's away for your birthday, and they've got very angry at me very
Yeah. Can
quickly.
you do like the party
We
3 days
would.
before? I don't know. I
Yeah,
don't, yeah.
exactly. We would, but I think for them, it's like, how do you explain that? Especially because at the same time, it's not like the band's paying for trips to Disney World or anything. So it's not like I can be like,
Right, you
all
can
right, but
translate
we're,
it.
yeah, we're gonna go
Yeah.
and see like Universal Studios, though, with the money we make. It's like, no, I
Yeah.
kind of need the money to pay the bills.
Yeah,
So,
we're getting by. Yeah.
yeah, it's
I
getting
mean,
by.
that's, you know, it's a hard lesson maybe. It sucks. I have like a standing, I won't be gone on Halloween. I just think like that's like my daughter's in high school and the other boy's in sixth grade. So a little ahead of eight, but maybe where your other ones are at. Halloween still seems like the one, like, I'm like, I don't want to miss this. Like, everybody's fucking dressed up. It's fun, candy. Like, that's like an actual fun one. Thanksgiving, I'm out of here. I mean, also, divorce life, I'm kind of like, it's too weird, anyways. You know, nobody, the kids don't want to go back and forth. Like, I'm just going to be gone on Thanksgiving. So,
Yeah. Halloween for me, we've missed a couple and it hurts me so much. And like
Yeah.
last Halloween, we're playing in New York City with the Damned on Halloween, right? Like, so I should be happy.
Pretty awesome. Yeah, it's, I mean, that's right.
But it's like, you know what it's like? It's like you're,
Yeah.
I would trade, you know, the Damned, the Cure, and Susie all playing in New York City to hang out with the kids on Halloween. And but
Yeah.
there's also other people depending on you
Yeah,
for.
I don't know. No, it's totally, it is a weird, this is, I like that. This is where the punk conversation went to. Like adult punk shit, right?
Yeah.
Like I get all of it. Also, like, you playing that show is like, that's a dream, man. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, holy cow, this is so fun on Halloween. Like, at any point of your life, you'd be like, this is the fucking goal. Like, we've made it. We're having, this is the best. Except my kids are all dressed up and they're running around. And yeah, so it's a weird, it's definitely like a, it's just with, you know, multiple kids. And if everybody's got multiple kids and everybody's got different schedule and different priorities, it's,
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Yeah.
It's different. It becomes, and I think it's the idea of like, you know, you should never expect to make money out of this thing, but at the same time, it is part of your life. And it's something that.
Well, to your point too, like this thing is offered to you, like this festival on the birthday. It's like, you got to pay your bills. Well, this is when it's offered. This is the job. I mean, I don't know about what your day to day is like, but my argument is I'm like, well, you know, 30, 20, 27 days a month, I'm making you breakfast. I'm making you lunches. I'm home when you get home from school. You know what I mean? Like, so a lot of the other dads are sort of like, they don't get home till 7 p.m. anyways. So, you know, they're missing all this stuff. So
I don't know. It's a trade-off. It's like and it sounds like I'm always weary about having these kinds of conversations, because I think if you're not, if it's not like your reality, it's going to sound like, oh my God, listen to these guys fucking complaining about this shit.
I mean, if you, whatever you want to cut after this, go ahead and cut.
Yeah, I think it's an important conversation to have, because there's like, it's funny. I talked to someone the other day who was on the podcast, a fellow J-Tree, former J-Tree recording artist too, Andy Nelson. And he was talking about how he didn't think, you know, bands shouldn't expect to make money off punk. And I think that's like a noble thing, but the guys who run the labels and the guys who put on the shows and the people that make the t-shirts and the people, like, there's a
lot of making money. Yeah.
They're making money off this thing. It's like a living for them. And certainly like you're saying, it changes the way you approach the thing when you're chasing the money, but it's just, I don't know. These are the things I wrestle with, and I'm not articulating it very well at all to you right now. But
you don't even have to. I mean, I don't know. I imagine some sort of audience, they might need more clarification. This is like half of our band practice is sort of like, you know, like what do we all want? It's all different, you know, and that's only in one band. I'm in a couple bands and there's different people in different stages of life. The middle class thing is so funny. It's a funny way to put it, because there's definitely, I think people listening that would maybe know your bands and my bands would like, I don't know, like maybe they just think because they know our music or our bands that we're like rich or famous or something.
Yeah.
But we're not at all, like in life. And then conversely, you know, like the other dads at Pickup are baffled that I get by. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, I get by. It's fine. You know, like there's just like this whole other, like, if you know, we're not Fall Out Boy, but we're not playing Starbucks. You know what I mean? Like there's something in between that we've gotten by, and it is, you know, it, you know, you could be punk and get by. I don't think you have to apologize for, like, you know, I think it can all happen, especially now. I mean, I don't know about, I'm blown away, like Fugazi won't play a show. Like, donate all the money to charity, just play the show, man. Just, you know, people want it. Like we were saying earlier, like people want to hear the old songs, they want to hear whatever. So
Ian, like not on this show, but like in conversations, he hates when I say this, but they can't do it now. Like, that's why I don't think they do it, because like look at Pearl Jam's struggle to find was it Clear Channel back then, or Ticketmaster? They were going against Clear, or like Conor Oberst versus Clear Channel when he was fighting that fight. These things are insurmountable kind of like challenges for the scale they would have to come back at. Like, I guess you could have an army of volunteers to do it and things like that. But I don't know. I think the amount of money that it would, you know, they're not going to be playing Coachella and.
Right. They should have their, well, whatever.
It would be interesting to see. I don't know. Like, I think that is the ultimate one. Right. And that's the one that kind of like, when you think about pre Nirvana, like who were the bands that were making a living doing this thing? It was few and far between, right? Like, so Dinosaur Jr., Sonic Youth,
Fugazi,
Replacements, Husker Du, probably, REM, obviously, on the higher end.
Yeah, but even REM, these bands, a lot of them had like major label, but like major label is different. You know, they're just, I mean, like they were still, right? I mean, before Nirvana, you know, like before, like, I mean, even just like major label, like they all had subsidiaries after Nirvana, and they all like, well, you're on this little branch of this major and you're getting the major money, but we don't care about you and whatever.
I guess Faith No More too, probably like a little bit later, also on a major by that point, just before.
They were definitely in a major. I mean, like, I liked them. I mean, I had to like know about them somehow, and it wasn't like some local label or something, or yeah.
It's they played on SNL in 88, which I find crazy.
Faith No More?
Yeah, and Sugar Cubes.
Sugar Cubes makes a little sense. Well, I guess. I don't know, but it also doesn't because I don't know. Yeah, like how popular could that music have been? But I don't know.
That's what I think too. Like
There
Rollins
was
Band
definitely.
played on there too.
Yeah.
Like there's some
Well,
weird years.
Rollins Band was after Nirvana, wasn't
Well, I think this is like before, right? Like I don't know. I haven't actually ever looked up the performance. I've been doing a nerdy deep dive into the like the punk history of SNL, and it's
it?
one of the things that's kind of come up. But
Yeah. Do you,
Ellen.
is there, there's definitely, I mean, like, is there anything cool or punk about their music choices in the past 15, 20 years or something? Or is it just sort of like popular bullshit?
A lot of it, like it's there's definitely stuff. It's like interesting to see how the relationship to punk with that thing changes and kind of follows punk's trajectory, where like Blink-182's on there a lot. The Foo Fighters, who are arguably the greatest collection of hardcore musicians not playing hardcore out there.
Hardcore asterisk, yeah.
But so there are like things like you point out, and Phoebe Bridgers on there as well. But yeah, it's definitely. But they had a really thorny relationship with punk, right? Elvis Costello changing the song halfway through,
Oh, and then they're like banned him or something.
yeah, Fear causing the riot, Replacements getting drunk, like it was,
Was Replacements banned? Like, did they only give that one performance? Yeah.
yeah, they got Harry Dean Stanton fucked up, and
Oh, right. I can picture, like, yeah, the meme of him fucked up. Him fucked up doesn't look that different than him not fucked up. I'm trying to think of, well, that shit's live. I mean, like, they're beholden to like these standards that, oh shit, that just went out live. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. It's different, you know. At
Yeah.
least they tried to have these punk things. I feel like there was like, it seemed like at some point, even just SNL in general was like this, like, that whatever the punk version of like a comedy thing would be, but early on, but
Yeah. Well, and then like John Belushi played in the Dead Boys
oh, okay, there you
for
go.
like
He's
one
an
show. And
actual, yeah.
yeah, there's like, and then actually, well, speaking of which, like Fred Armisen, did you ever see Trenchmouth?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what, yeah. They were, I mean, these bands were like, a Trench Mouth is another band with like 8 Bark and stuff, but like they're just like grandfathers of like what I thought. I'm like, this is the coolest shit ever. And these bands, like, they're playing the Fireside Bowl or something, and like the whole place is losing their mind. But I don't know how they did on tour. I don't know if they never had tour support, or like, I don't know if they sold any records or whatever.
Yeah,
Yeah, Fred was amazing.
it feels like Chicago had like a real like bands could be super popular in Chicago, but that popularity might not translate outside
You
of.
know, like Naked Ray Gun?
Yes,
Or,
exactly.
yeah, they were, I mean, like, everybody, if you're, everybody had to love them, but I don't know how they did. I mean, I knew they must have done all right. They were like a real band, but yeah, in Chicago, that's like, they're like Green Day now, just like, oh, fuck, like, yeah, Naked Ray Gun, everybody. Like,
Yeah, I love them, and they definitely are, revered around the world. But my gauge for it was always the fact that when you went to Chicago, Chicago bands' records were always more expensive than they would be outside of the city.
that's hilarious. I mean, yeah, I remember.
I remember my Naked Ray Gun 7-inch I bought for I forget how much, but then I went to Chicago, and it was like double the price everywhere
They're
you went.
selling fast. I don't know. Yeah.
But it feels like there was this sort of like real insular kind of scene where like even if the bands got out there, they might not connect in the same way they did locally.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, I think so. I'm like really proud of like just whoever was influencing me. I always thought like New York was like everybody's trying to be super cool, right? Musicians or whatever. Like, there's always like a character. And then LA, everybody's trying to be famous. So there's also this character. But New York or Chicago is just like working class musicians. Just like, I just, yeah, like, even I'm saying, like, even as like getting a little older, like, I'll like like the influence Tortoise had of just like, oh my God, like they sort of flipped, like this is like they were such a fun, cool live show, like two percussionists, all the bells, all the stuff. And then everybody's like, well, I don't need to just, play loud or play angular and stuff. I can make it like jazzy. Like that's a cool, like indie, cool new thing. I'm just like remembering like all the ways Chicago, like the city has influenced me. Those were like different steps for sure.
Well, it's like it's wild because, like you're saying, in a few years, this sort of like new scene mixes with the city scene, and you have like so much stuff, like from the Victory Records stuff to the Touch and Go stuff to the, I guess, more AMRAP stuff, which I guess crosses over a little bit. But like, there's just like to the pop punk Screeching Weasel stuff, and then like the sort of like birth of what I guess gets labeled Midwestern emo is also kind of popping off at the same time too. Which is interesting because like I don't know, I imagine that's like a fairly fraught term to have to be saddled with given what gets labeled emo these days.
I don't ever think about it. Like if this podcast was turned out emo, I'd be like, I don't think I'll pass. Yeah, like I just don't think about it. I'm way more concerned if I said dumb shit to my kids' friends' parents. I'm saying like whatever I'm doing that is called emo or something. I'm just like, man, I only listen to Smith and Cure. Like, all that shit was just like hard on your sleeve, like dramatic, whatever. I'm like, that was so. That's where that's coming from. I don't know.
Like, because like I talked to Andy and I was talking to Dan as well, and like I think he's got the same sort of thing with Lifetime, where like he was in a punk band and he was just playing this kind of music, and this was the music that came out, and doesn't really feel a lot of relationship or kinship even with a lot of the people that were into what he was into, or like was it or that were into the band, I should say, they were into Lifetime in the post-Lifetime world. So yeah, it's like it's, but I find
So
it.
what, wait, what world would that be though that he's not?
I like he doesn't. I don't want to name names for him, but I threw out a series of names, and he said, "Well, I don't really feel a lot of relationship with all those bands." And it was like Fall Out Boy, Newfound Glory, and Saves the Day.
All those bands would have loved Lifetime, but
Yes,
I
huge.
absolutely could see it doesn't, it's not a two-way street. I mean, it's because, I mean, Lifetime was just like totally fucking punk, but like melodic in these ways that these other bands are like, they took like the melody and they kind of just like ironed it out and it was like palatable. It's still loud, it's still like whatever, but it's like more fun or something. And Lifetime, they blended like hardcore in a way that these other bands either didn't want to or couldn't execute as well
Well,
or
they get,
something.
yeah, look, well, that when, New Jersey's Best Dancers came out, it was like this moment where all these hardcore bands were like, pop punk, that's the ticket. Like it was, and that, and it would happen here in Toronto. There were definitely tons of bands that kind of came out of that wake. But I find that also, that's what I love about this music too, is that there's certain records that come out and it's like everything changes. And the reaction might not necessarily be positive to it. Like there might be a whole wave of people that are like, fuck this. Like I always bring up Jamie Josta in Victory Magazine saying that he formed Hatebreed because someone told him Quicksand was a hardcore band, and he was like so pissed that that was what hardcore was at that point. Walter doesn't seem as stoked about it when I tell him, but I'm like, that's amazing that you can inspire with both swings of the sword.
It's like negative. That's hilarious. I mean, also like that cracks me up, like that he like took such offense that he's like, I gotta change this or something. I'm laughing about sort of full circle. I remember playing a J Tree, what was it, like a CMJ J Tree show. Imagine like Joan of Arc had to play with Lifetime, and I'm just like, well, this is a weird bill, man. Like, whatever. It's so funny. I was like always a fan. Again, probably not a two-way street is how I took it.
Well, I bet you they loved you guys. I'm willing to
I
bet.
what we didn't get that a lot of we didn't get that vibe. I'm saying. I think personalities. I mean, everybody's really nice, and whoever I don't really know them. But I think it was like kind of like I think we were like the odd uncle at the party or something. Maybe I don't know.
But I think that's the thing is like, as I think the logical quote unquote thing in the careerist impressing the dads at school kind of vibe would be at the end of Cap and Jazz for Joan of Arc to be more accessible and become like where everything else seemed to go with that sort of like,
yeah.
Sound. But you guys went the opposite way. It made something that way more challenging. And
I mean, that's all way more punk. That's all Tim. No, Tim is, I mean, you know, it's, I won't take any credit. I wrote a lot of those same songs and stuff, but you know, the deconstruction element was all Tim just being like, nah, I don't think we should play loud. I don't think we should do like what Cap and Jazz said. We already did it. And I'm like, that's cool. It is cool. Having gotten back in a room and playing these Cap and Jazz songs, like, oh man, it would have been fun. And we would have only just gotten better at it. Like I think, yeah. Anyways.
Cap and Jazz is like the Green River of emo, where like the band breaks up. Davey goes on to the Pearl Jam side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys go on to the Mudhoney side of things.
I wish I was in Mudhoney.
Right? Like, you know, I'm sure Mudhoney, you know, like misrepping the calculations like that. I see a sonic kinship between Joan of Arc and that band. Have you heard that stuff?
I don't know. No, I don't know.
It was Mark Arm's pre Green River band. That's just like super out there weirdo punk, I guess, for lack of a descriptor.
It's just like the catch-all for something that doesn't fit into like,
yeah, because I think that's I think it's hardcore where it really starts getting like codified in this kind of like real way, and it's easy to market, and that I guess that's ultimately why all these things become part of like popular lexicon is because it's make something sellable. But prior to that, like it could be like the Screamers, and it could be the Go-Go's, and it could be the Germs, and it could be Black Flag. It could be anything.
And everything.
That Octung Chicago comp. You know, like you go through that. Every band sounds different there, but you guys are all just like united by the fact that you're like, you want to make music. And like you said, like where geography affects music hugely. Like, I think that's why Toronto never really had a big 80s hardcore scene, is because Toronto's kind of an industry town. So there was always that path to success in metal or new wave, where some places where there wasn't that path, the music develops differently.
Yeah. But no, I mean, like New York and LA were like, you could just your whole, you know, again, it's like maybe there's like some acting element or performing element that the Chicago bands didn't have. You know what I mean? Like there was nobody in Trenchmouth. Because Damon is like he's a great front man. Like he was like a proper front man. Like, you know, a lot of the other bands are just working class dudes just trying to like play the song. You know, that's like, that was the vibe kind of. I guess Steve Albini was a transplant to Chicago, but he's a great front man. He's got like a energy.
And Damon's a transplant too, right? I think he's from DC originally. So that could explain that.
Oh, yeah. Maybe he was. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, again, like it's like the next generation, but that would explain it actually. It's got like that DC kind of. That's a different
It's a different kind of energy. I find the DC thing especially like it's something that looms so large in punk, especially at that time where, like, be it Fugazi or a little bit later on with, you know, the Riot Girl stuff or the Nation of Ulysses stuff before that kind of coming out of there. Like you've got like a real influence on stuff that's happening.
Oh, it was everywhere. I mean, huge. That was sort of like the scene that, I feel like whatever, like our Midwest collective happening, all of us were just huge fans of what was happening there. It was just a trickle down of, anything on Discord. And it's like it was so varied too that like we just everybody, you know, it was like, oh my god, you hear this new Discord band, Shudder Think, you hear this new band, Jawbox, blew our minds, and And they also like all these bands were got like so good, like technically so good that it was the perfect for me at that age to like, oh shit, like what's happening here? Like, I mean, Shudder Think was huge of just like, what the fuck is that beat? So I'm, you know, learning how to play drums at that time. So I'm like trying to learn while learning that. You know, up until that point, I'm just listening to like Lars Ulrich fucking just hit everything on the everything at the same time on all the things. Anyways,
Yeah, no, it is like the I don't know, the impact, but like you were saying earlier about the influence of these record stores, like you find out that like that Empire record showing up at Yesterday and Today becoming the huge influence on all those bands to have that sound, and that's where they were kind of discovering it from too. And it's just sort of this like, it's interesting how it gets passed around and the influence and seeing where that influence is taken. I think with Cap and Jazz, the thing that I've always been struck by is that there's like a television personalities or a like UK DIY kind of feel to it too, where there's like a like a playfulness
Yeah,
that's
absolutely. I mean, that's like the youthful shit. Like, I don't think that, and I think none of that would come out right now. I mean, just from having band practices a couple weeks ago, like, I wouldn't play these beats. I actually said, I'm like, should I like try to play the beats as they are, or should I try to play them as I'd play them as a grown man who like put some thought into them and wasn't just trying to hit them? Like, and they're like, just play them as they are. Like, just play the things that, yeah. So, you know, like, I wouldn't have hit a crash cymbal on every 1, 3, 5, 7, 9. Yeah, I'm just like hitting everything. I'm like, what a fucking idiot. Yeah, like, so there's something about it captured a moment when that's what happened. So, you know.
Yeah, and that's what I
Always.
think keeps is, well, that's what makes it more in line with like K Records than
Oh,
Discord
sure.
Records.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. No, I always thought, I don't even know her name, the drummer of Unwound. During Cap'n Jazz was a huge influence on me of just kind of like dance, like just like random like errant crash cymbals. I'm like, I used to love that. I would, yeah, it was like a this like it was just a weird technical sloppiness. Like, it just sounded like, yeah, I was a big fan of that. So I'm
I was talking to Molly Newman from Bratmobile the other day, and we were talking about drumming and just like there's such like oh, this is like the good drumming. And to be a good drummer, you got to sound like Keith Moon or John Bonham, and that's good drumming. But like there's so many cool different styles in punk, and going back to like proto-punk stuff too, like where like people are just playing this completely differently, and the drums can serve a different purpose in a band than they
Yeah.
do in a lot of rock and roll.
Totally. We're, you know, like when we make these like American football demos, when I'm writing a guitar part, I hear the drums. And so I'll demo out what I'm hearing. And then the drummer, Steve, is always like, can you send me a version without the drums? You know, the demo drums. And he sends back something totally different. Like, it'll be a different one. It'll be a different everything. Just totally different. It's like two different languages of the same instrument. And then there's another drummer in the band, Nate, who like tries to finesse everything. Cause I'll be like, I don't even know what Steve just sent me. And I'll be like, no, he's here like a 9. Like he's like translating between us. Yeah, it's total. I mean, yeah, like it's you don't. My favorite drummer of all time is probably Alex Van Halen. And I think he's fucking incredible and like a total unicorn. Like, the production on his drums are also like so weird that I could see why people don't like it. It's like totally, anyways. I don't know if he's a good drummer. Like, I don't know if he can play to a click track. It doesn't seem like it. I made a tweet probably a decade ago. It's like my best tweet ever. It's like, it sounds like Alex Van Halen never heard any of the songs until he had to track them. Just like, okay, play along to this. And just like, oh, fuck, like, just gonna keep up. And I love that sound. Like, it's so cool. It's also so cool that they're like the biggest band in the world. And they're just like, that sounds cool, good enough. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like tight. It's not like, it doesn't seem super planned out. You know, it just seems sort of like, it seems like raw in a way that it's attractive.
Well, it's like, I guess like that's what gives a lot of the personality to these bands.
Totally. That's why
Like,
that band is unique. Right. That's why everything now is sort of like, you know, quantized. And I mean, I am aware of the bands I'm in. I know which bands of mine are quantized, whatever. I also appreciate like when it's not that way. I'm like, oh, fuck, that must be cool.
well, and that I think there's space for everything like that too. Like, there's
Sure.
space for Bomber from RKL strumming style, and there's space for Mo Tucker's drumming style, and maybe not most politics as much, but like definitely the drumming style over the politics these days.
We're talking drums. Yeah. We're only talking about drums.
We're only talking the drumming on this thing. What are some of your memories in terms of like the violence at shows? Like, was there violence at the shows by the time you were going? Cause I've definitely heard Chicago has had periods of pretty heavy shit going down at shows.
Either I missed it, I'm too young, or I'm too old. No, I mean, no, we weren't playing like, I'm thinking maybe in the 80s, there was like Naked Raygun shows. There was probably some like skinhead type of punk element that was probably, a thing to like deal with, like some fucking dorks in the suburbs that are so bored that they have to, whatever. Anyways, that wasn't really a thing. It was all just fucking love. It was so, I mean, like Cap'n Jazz days, like all of our sort of DIY shit was like, so like anywhere we went, it was just like people, it's like, oh, this is unbelievable. Like you got 50 people in this basement and you made us dinner and we get to also sleep on your floor. Yeah, it's unbelievable. So it was all just kind of like positive, I think.
How much
you asked about violence, right?
Yeah, it was about violence at the shows. Yeah.
No, I mean, we there was never, I guess the playful thing you're talking about too with Cap'n Jazz, like there was never, it wasn't even, there was no like, it was definitely like anti sort of like East Coast hardcore tough guy shit. Like there was no, there wasn't like that sporty jockey mix of like, yeah, it was just all, you know, it was all goof kind of. Like goofy punk or something. I don't know.
Well, not that these guys were necessarily, you know, violent assholes or anything, but like there's also like the Billingsgate, Only the Strong, Bloodthirst, like this whole other sort of like hardcore scene. Like that's East Coast leaning.
Yeah, less asshole, but definitely there's like a jockey kind of like tough guy, right? I mean, my take of it is it wasn't like, you know, like we didn't start this. Tim wasn't like, here we go. Like, you know, get ready for, you know, it was just sort of like, I don't know, is everybody ready? We're in tune. I'm just gonna, and then it was more chaos than like, you know, like some controlled aggression or something. Yeah.
So what bands did you guys play with? Like, was it Gage and that sort of?
Gage played every weekend. So either we played every other weekend with them and then went and saw them every other weekend. We didn't play. Gage was like total big brothers for all of us. And like way more proficient on their instruments than we were. So they were always like an inspiration. Friction was a band I loved, which is Bob from When It To Be Braid.
They formed right after you guys, right? Like shortly thereafter.
Friction might've, maybe. They might've been going on kind of with us maybe. And then I feel like they were kind of early-ish. I mean they were releasing stuff. Their bass player was like, he started Shake Fork Records. It was like, you know, like it was like they were like a different, they were a west suburb, we were kind of like a north suburb, and so we would like bring our friends to their shows. They would Trench Mouth, we played a bunch probably with them. Eight Bark, I'm trying to think of, there's a Tetsuo. Oof. Would be like a metalish kind of band. It was like friends of ours.
Was Bobo Stiffs had probably broken up by then, but was Gear going?
I don't know. I don't know them. Maybe, yeah. Maybe it's an underground thing, but
connection.
Oh. I mean, I'm a fan of Peg Boy. I don't know if we played with Peg Boy. Maybe we played once with Peg Boy. Did they went on to be Peg Boy?
No, I think one of the guys from Peg Boy was in Bopal Stiffs, and then someone from Bopal Stiffs was in Gear.
Okay. And it sounds familiar.
Gears, I think, on Octung Chicago 1.
I think that's how I know it. Yeah. Just from the underdog connection. But I don't really. Yeah, I don't think it was a crossover show or playing shows, maybe.
It's wild when you break down those comps, that like first run of comps that you guys are on. It's like those things are awesome. Like Chicago is such a comp city. Oh, my God, dude. Okay, let's run them down real quick.
No, we don't even have to. I think it's so cool. Again, it's like I guess it was at the time, you know, it'd be like, oh, like instead of going and shooting more baskets at the park on a Saturday, we're going to go into a studio and we're going to make this thing. And then we're going to get them pressed and then we're going to have this merchandise and sell them at the show. Like it was like this whole, like, It was like the coolest lemonade stand ever for like a high school kid, like to be able to like, yeah, like it was just so fun. Yeah.
Were there other bands like our Ivy League and those bands?
Ivy
We
League is a dude from a couple guys from Gage was in Ivy League.
and Dan
They went on.
Panic was the drummer.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Danny Panic. Then he played in Screeching Weasel and he started Slugsworth was another band that
Yeah.
like I liked for a hot minute.
Love that band.
Yeah. They were
Fantastic.
fun. Did a
It's
couple catchy ones. Yeah, I guess I mean I'm it's everything we're naming. I'm like, oh yeah, I totally like remember this band and played with these bands. I don't think we were like accepted by all these scenes at the time. You know, we kind of create our own scene with our own friends. Because they were sort of established and they were more melodic or more, I don't know.
Well, do you guys play with Crudos? Would because I could picture like fests with you guys on them back then.
A couple times I think we played, we were the band playing at 1 p.m. and they probably played at 8 p.m. I remember just in Wrigleyville, I remember like my mom having to drive me to play one of those fests or whatever. But I like wasn't allowed. It was at a bar or something. I had to just like they let me in just to play drums for our set and then I had to leave. So my mom drove me.
I guess Martine's the exception to that sort of not like not great front people thing we were talking about earlier from
Oh
or
no,
humble front
killer.
people, like one of the greatest front people of all time.
Yeah, they were no, we were like fans. I don't think we like crossed paths a lot. I know like seeing him at Fireside and shit, like it was it yeah, there were some bands that were just like we don't deserve to play with them. I don't know. Like we're just a bunch of kids and fun crushing it. Yeah. Yeah, Crudos is awesome. I'm trying to think like I'm just also having the Fireside as this venue. Like it's, every band it was just bringing whatever we were doing in Chicago, they were bringing that same scene from every other city around the country through Chicago. So I can witness it also. Yeah. It was so fun. It was like collecting baseball cards, but it was just 7 inches and bands and yeah.
It also felt like as the 90s went on and into the 2000s, kind of like the walls were going up between subgenres in a way, like to the point where Tim from Rise Against was on the show and says that he got made fun of by his friends when he joined a band with people from 88 Fingers Louie.
Oh, that's
But
funny. Right, yeah. Like whatever they, yeah.
because it was like a completely different world by that point. Like there's that, and I love Bo Weevils, I love 88 Fingers Louie, and I love that sound too. Like that's what I think is so great about the cities. There's just like every band's fucking awesome.
I think you're right. I think like early 90s, we would have all been on the same bill for sure. I mean, I can picture the Cap'n Jazz Bo Weevils flyer in my head still, like whatever, like and then maybe just within a decade or something. Again, yeah, like maybe it's like Nirvana broke everything and then I don't know. It's like yeah, started getting classified and then major labels started classifying shit and yeah, it happened that fast, I guess.
Yeah, like, was there? I guess you're so young, but like, was that perceptible to you? Like, there's all that talk about like Screeching Weasel maybe getting signed in the wake of Green Day. So I guess that would have been a few years later.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when Green Day signed, it was like I took it as an insult and whatever. And I thought Dookie sounded terrible, even though it objectively sounds probably fantastic compared to like all the Kerplunk. I was like a big fan of like the early shit. It's the same. I took my daughter to see Olivia Rodrigo last night, and the way she's like, she's 14 and like so into it and like a fan. I'm like, that's how I was with Green Day before they like signed. And then, yeah, I know, like the Nirvana thing was a huge deal, actually. I mean, I remember seeing the video of Smells Like Teen Spirit for the first time freshman year of high school. There was a pizza place that we can walk to from school. And during lunch, Nirvana, we're like, just like a tiny shitty TV in the corner. And we're just like, what the fuck was that? Like, was that just on TV? Like, what the fuck? Like, that was, and then, within 4 months, there'd be like these like local battle of bands or whatever. Every battle of bands, every band played Smells Like Teen Spirit. So we knew something was happening. We were the only band playing like originals. And like all these, they're all doing Smells Like Teen. They're all doing the same song. Yeah, it was crazy.
So would you guys still do like little kid band stuff, like playing Battle of the Bands? Like, because you had records on Underdog by 89, right? Or 90,
Not
92, I guess, maybe 91.
90 or 91 or 2, I think, was sort of when we started. 91, I guess. I mean, it's all little kid band shit. I mean, yeah, like it was I got brought out of I got taken out of school in eighth grade to go play the variety show at Tim's High School. You know what I mean? Like it was like, oh, you can miss the middle of this day and we're gonna play this variety show, and I thought it was a big deal. And we a couple of our friends were like, they just wanted to be on stage, so we told them to just like mosh while we're playing. So we just played the variety show and they moshed, and you know, and I thought it was a big deal because I was in eighth grade hanging out with high school kids. We played I just remember, I don't even know who the girl is. Jenny Garcia's graduation party. Like we just played her backyard, you know, like, you know, they were like, she was a senior punk or something, and we were little punks. I don't know. I mean, it was all that shit. That's all it was. That was, again, like, that was the only option, though. It was like, it wasn't, there was no, we didn't have, there was no, it wasn't like we didn't even have it because we couldn't find one. There was no, you didn't have like a manager or booking agent. You know, Tim would just find numbers in Maximum Rock and Roll and just like call people or write people and be like, can we play? You know, I'm trying to set up this like 2 week tour out, you know, and we made our way all the way up to you know, like South Dakota is as far west as we got. Just like, you know, there's no, we didn't have any maps. You just like pull over. Okay, we're at this like gas station you told us we'd find. What do we do now? How do we get to your house? Okay, cool. Yeah, it was so fun. That wouldn't, I mean, I wish I could like take my kids' cell phones away and like be like, go on tour for a month and figure it out. You'll have the best, you know what I mean? You're gonna hate it, but you're gonna love it. It's the best, yeah.
I think subjecting any kid to life in a van without a cell phone now, that would be hell for me as a
Yeah,
40
as a
something
pay, yeah, I know. I couldn't, I know I'm addicted too, but
year old. I was it ever like you were leading this double life? Because you're still like in high school as you're in this band that obviously it's not like you're saying, like it's not like on mainstream radio at the same time, but like you're doing real shit at the same time that like,
it
you know, there's
wasn't
high
real.
school.
I'm saying it was really, it was real fun. It wasn't, there wasn't, it wasn't, I mean, it was like the coolest hobby, you know what I mean? Like it was, you know, if so, if Tim's a junior and I'm a freshman in high school, and we know, I don't know, maybe, yeah, I mean, he started driving, whatever. My parents are so cool. They got us like this tiny old shitty used van, and so we spent the summer, you know, like gutting it, building a loft, and putting, I mean, it was so fun. You know, it's the first time I got to use like tools, like anything I've done, it's because we started the stupid band. So it was so fun. I remember, like, you know, we'd have like a show in Wisconsin on a Sunday night, and then we'd drive home after the show, and I'd go to school Monday, and I'd be wearing whatever cool like Compound Red shirt or whatever band, you know, from Wisconsin. I thought it was so cool that nobody else in the school had this shirt but me. And like, yeah, it was fun.
Well, that's the other great thing about punk is it is kind of like the I know this is loaded, so every time I say this, I feel like maybe I should find another way of explaining it. But it's almost like the real red pill, like where
Oh,
you're,
yeah.
you know, like you're all of a sudden all the high school shit is inverted. So the coolest people are now the biggest dorks, and you don't want to hang out and go to their events. You don't want any part of it. They don't understand where you're living now at all, and
Right.
it saved me in a lot of ways. It certainly
Yeah.
saved my mental health.
Yeah. And then once like you see that though, like you're just like you're a bulletproof then. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Yeah, that's what, yeah, exactly. Like once you find, I think it's sort of like find your people and you find confidence in anything. I mean, like you know, that's what I'm so indebted to. I'm thinking back like this guy Mark Pearsall, who wasn't really in bands, but he was like, he put out the first Cabin Jazz record. You know what I mean? Like, he's just some kid that figured out how to save enough money to press 1,000 records or whatever, you know, 500. I don't know what the first pressing was. And I don't think it was like he didn't have aspirations of getting rich and famous doing it. He just thought it was so fucking cool. You know what I mean? Like, and then he did that and it enabled all of us to continue doing this. It's like this whole path that once it started, yeah, like it's just led me here, which is awesome.
It's weird because now there's everything's got social capital and everything's part of your personal marketing, social media campaign. I mean, like as individuals, not even just people in bands.
Oh, yeah, I mean, like a 14, my daughter. Yeah, I mean, like
Yeah,
everybody, right? Yeah, yeah.
everyone, right? So, like, it's weird to think about people doing the thing just to do the thing when there wasn't
Yeah.
necessarily fame involved. Like these sort of like And I guess putting out records, you know, you could become like Gerard Cosloy and become like a famous for putting out records. But like for the most part, it's kind of a thankless job, or like putting on a show. Like there was no social capital in putting on a show.
Yeah. I mean, at the time you got to see the band that you want. That's why I'm telling you, like, you know, like we would, our buddies would bring Lungfish because we're like, well, we want to see them. Let's offer them the how much money. Okay, how many friends do we have to have show up? Cool. Everybody's going to pay $5. Okay, we got enough money. We told them how much we had. And they're like, yeah. And then Dan Higgs shows up and is a total fucking weirdo. And we all got exactly what we wanted. Like, got to witness his weirdness.
His son was the guitar player in the band Trapped Under Ice, which is the pre-Turnstile band. So you can connect Lungfish to Turnstile.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in like two moves.
But he's not in Turnstile. He didn't go on to Turnstile, but he...
No.
Trapped Under Ice. That's so funny that his son... Daniel Higgs' son?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, he did the art for their first 7-inch.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like... I don't know. I find that also interesting. Like, my kids have very little interest in punk outside of Nirvana these days, but... and that's only my youngest that's into Nirvana, but like I would love the idea of this being some sort of culture that I can pass on to them, and then these records don't become garbage, they become something that's actually
cherished. Like total fucking cherished. Yeah, I mean, me too. Like the kids have no interest in it's just I guess I don't know, like I said I wish they would go on a tour or something. I wish they would just like find something as what's the word I'm looking for, like I guess, I don't know, Tim probably told the story. Like, my mom baked Fugazi a cake and delivered it to him backstage. They played in Chicago, and I was a freshman in college, and I came up from school to go to the show, and she just, like, made him a cake, and, like, you know, like, security kind of, like, walked her back. And I just remember she was like, I made this cake. Thanks so much for being such a great influence on my kids. Like, she appreciated, in the same way that I'm saying about, like, my kids, like, find something that's, like, you know, like valuable, like, yeah, like the influence they had is just like, I mean, obviously musically, but also just as like the ethos of and stuff is like, it didn't help us make any money, but it like, it totally instilled like really cool ethics in us. So,
yeah, like what I had a friend who definitely was not straight edge very long, but used to always say, like, even if it is just a trend or just a phase, like, what a great phase for a young person to have where they can. You know, and I feel like the values that these people instilled, granted, when you're trying to make a living in it, do become kind of a burden in a lot of ways, but they do set you on a path that is, you know, like, they're, why can't we set up our own economies? Why can't we exist independently from these things? And
or like, even, I mean, like, why I can sleep pretty good on floors still. I just have these skills that like, I don't think most people either want to have or should have, but I'm like, I can probably sleep on a floor, no problem. You know what I mean? I can fall asleep under a kitchen table during a party because I've done it before. Exactly. Yeah. I've had to do it. So
it was great with kids because, well, it was terrible for my poor partner, Lauren, but for me, because I could sleep through like babies crying. Like, oh my God. I've dealt with adults crying that I've slept through.
Yeah. All the bandmates. Exactly. They've all cried. Yeah. This is nothing.
Yeah, exactly. This has been amazing. And I got to say, Mike, if you ever want to come back on this thing and talk about any of this stuff, I would love to have you back on.
Okay, cool. Yeah, thanks for asking me. It's fun.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.